Hello, today's Tuesday, November 19th, and we're preparing for Turkey Day.
What are you preparing so far in advance?
So far in advance, mostly just myself.
What
emotionally,
would you be,
also my car.
What will you be bringing this year to the...
I usually bring desserts, and then I go over early and help my mom cook. So, I'm not much of a cook, but she directs me.
Well, I don't have a lead-in from that to the first
story.
No. I was kind of like stalling there for a minute trying to think of one.
No, there's nothing.
And it wasn't happening. But who, you know someone who I hope doesn't have a happy Thanksgiving?
Oh, no.
It takes a minute. There it is.
How the FCC solves consumer problems. Well, it doesn't really. This Ars Technica article is just about one Congress critter that is like, hey, wait a minute.
Congress critter.
Ajit Pai is not doing anything. Is anybody else seeing this? He's like literally not doing a thing.
Well, there's a committee. So they point out the flow chart of the FCC. So let's say that they use the example of a guy who bought a Verizon router. So
right.
From Verizon.
They had this special router, and he was like, okay, I'm going to buy it from you rather than lease it from you. And they're like, okay, here it is. And then what was the company that bought it?
Frontier.
Frontier bought that
leg
section of the country from Verizon. And they said to that guy, hey, you've got an unauthorized router. You have to pay us $10 a month because that's added support. And he's like, bro, you sold me the router. So he complained. And he complained and he complained and he complained. And this congressman kind of like followed the trail. And what he discovered is when something like this happens, the FCC forwards it to the ISP and does nothing else.
Well, the FCC responded and said that we sent that to the FTC. But they didn't really. The FTC proactively requested consumer complaints. Only then did the FCC send that complaint to the FTC, not when the complaint occurred.
This just sounds like so much bureaucracy. Just like, pass it on to the next department. I don't know.
Well, the FCC, the point of the article was that the FCC is supposed to be responsible for these kind of things, and they've completely abdicated all responsibility to the FTC, but they're also interfering with communicating with the FTC. So, like, should this guy complain directly to the FTC? That's not how that works.
So they're literally a middleman bureaucracy that should be removed, is what you're saying.
they don't do anything. It's like it just goes straight to the shred pile. It's like, oh, a consumer complaining about their service. Look at that, how quaint.
Those jobs should maybe be removed.
It's kind of like when you break up with somebody because they're toxic and you don't want anything to do with them anymore, but you also don't want anybody else to date them because there's that lingering jealousy. And that pretty much explains how things go at the FCC. See, they don't want any regulation. They don't want to regulate the ISPs. So they say, listen, we're out. We're dusting our hands off. We're not going to do anything with them. It's the Wild West. And then the states come in. They're like, all right, we'll do it. And the FCC says, wait a minute. Hold up.
The FCC has been sued by dozens of cities after the FCC voted to kill local fees and rules. So what the FCC is doing is saying that in order for a cable company to establish a franchise in a city, the city used to be able to make a deal with the cable franchise to get certain things in return. The FCC is saying, no, that doesn't fly anymore. We're going to set caps and rates and things like that. So a lot of small cities and even larger ones stand to lose a lot of revenue and incentives, things like free cable and internet service for schools, things like that, in various regions because they no longer have any negotiating power over these ISPs.
So, yeah, they don't want to have rules, but they also don't want anybody else making the rules that they refuse to make.
This is something that probably affects a lot of small town America because those towns typically don't have a lot of negotiation power. This also applies to things like wireless 5G easements. If you don't want a tower built in your backyard, this is kind of related to that.
Luckily, some judges in the past have seen this for what it is, and they're saying, hey, if you don't want to be a part of this and you don't want to make the rules and you're just walking away, then you can't say that other people can't make the rules. You can't. It's one way or the other. You can't have it both ways. So hopefully these lawsuits will see some fruit.
Yeah, some of them were applying on like constitutional grounds, like the federal government can't interfere with local governments, which maybe.
That's a win. Speaking of the federal government overreaching to the point of strangling us, how about those illegal searches at the border, which were somehow legal because, what was it, like 100 miles or 200 miles?
Yeah.
It was most of the country once you factor in the fact that, you know, it's like all, it's a big circle all the way around it, but eats up most of it. Well, good news about those.
A U.S. federal court has finally ruled that suspicionless searches of phones at the border is illegal. Not just phones, laptops, any other kind of electronic searches. Like, give us your passwords? Nope. If you're a U.S. citizen, this is not cool. You have to be at least suspected of a crime. Now, of course, the bar for being suspected of a crime is pretty low. It's like, oh, I think I saw him trying to get a bag of ho-hos out of the vending machine. Search his phones.
He was in line, and then he went to the bathroom, and, you know, he could have anything on him now.
Like, he's suspected of incontinence.
Yeah.
Yeah, there'll be more of that, but maybe it'll help if, you know, it's just like a really hot girl, and they're hoping for some nudes on that phone. You know, it's like...
maybe it'll stop that.
Maybe. Probably not.
Hot girls can never do anything wrong and be suspected of a crime.
Well, I mean, you know, Customs and Border Patrol, it's like Taylor Swift is wandering through and it's like, we have to search Taylor Swift's phone.
Well, what I'm saying is they have to come up with a compelling reason. And, you know, if it's like a teenage girl from the Midwest, suspecting her of terrorism might not fly. They'll have to get more creative. And I don't think those people are very creative or they wouldn't have those jobs. But you know who is creative? Presidential candidate Andrew Yang. He has some very creative solutions in this article from a lot of different technological questions.
The Verge reports that Andrew Yang wants to tax digital ads and launch a new algorithm regulator. Oh man, it was the Department of the Attention Economy.
I was just like, talk about newspeak.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of sections here. Yeah. Okay, disinformation on social media. I mean, what are you going to do about that? He claims that his tax is going to make it too expensive to disinform.
Yeah, there's a lot of non sequiturs like that. And, like, I was intrigued, and then I was like, all right, give me some details. And it's like, oh, you've just...
Oh, he doesn't understand. Bless his heart.
Data ownership and privacy. We've actually talked about this before. He thinks that everybody should own their own data and get paid for it. But the tracking of that is going to be very difficult to do.
Yeah.
There's going to have to be another government organization that he creates.
He's making jobs.
He's certainly making more government. for the breaking up of the tech companies, now he disagrees with Warren. He thinks that basically he should tell them how to run their businesses, but not break them up.
Mm. Which, that's really worked out so far.
loot boxes. How about a presidential candidate weighing in on loot boxes? He didn't really say a lot about that one. Just that was just kind of like
he's,
you know,
quietly got like 600 stashed up.
Lip service.
Yeah.
He's got like every FIFA spent $10,000 of taxpayer money.
This wasn't as bad as that. The guy from the UK talking about ISP service, but foreshadowing.
And the health stuff, so we'll talk about that a little bit later, but, you know, he's talking about how tech's getting into health and applying AI and the dangers of that. And
the AI regulation will definitely work.
All great questions. I don't know if his answers are good, but I think it is kind of refreshing to see a presidential candidate actually, like, getting into the weeds and talking about the... can you imagine Joe Biden trying to have an opinion on any of that?
Every time I hear a politician talking about any of this stuff, I think back to the Facebook thing, like the Facebook testimony, and like I wake up in terror at night remembering some of, because it's like the misunderstanding, the level of misunderstanding of technology is shocking. This wasn't as bad comparatively by a lot.
Well, yeah, it's got a leg up on most of the existing people, I'll say that. So
this is a little maybe optimistic about what you're actually capable of doing, but
a lot of those answers were just, no, I'm going to fix it.
Yeah.
Without any really concrete details.
No, Senator, magnets don't work that way.
We talked about the Jedi contract, which went to Microsoft, surprising a lot of people. Now, this has had a long and storied career. Was it Oracle that sued first?
Yeah.
Oracle was out, so they sued. And then it was Microsoft and Amazon, and everybody thought Amazon had it because, I mean, AWS, what are you going to do?
The people that were working on the government side that were government employees were former Amazon employees. How is that not wired for Amazon?
Yeah, so some people, Jeff Bezos probably being one of them, believe that Donald Trump's hatred of him might have had some impact, and he's going to try to do something about it.
Yeah, NPR has the article. Amazon appeals the Pentagon's choice for Microsoft on the $10 billion cloud contract. I don't think anything will really come of this. I mean, it might be true about the whole Trump hatred thing. I don't know. The best case scenario for this is that it's going to be a joint award between Microsoft and Amazon. They'll split the pot. But there are too many other things like the Exchange and the Office apps in the cloud that Amazon doesn't have a good answer to for it to be solely an Amazon award. So,
the best case scenario is Amazon gets that $10 billion and then...
We get like five.
And then puts all that money into the new Amazon Lord of the Rings series. Nothing else.
Well, didn't they say it was going to be $1 billion?
I think it does have like an obscenely high budget, so we'll see how it turns out.
Well, you talk about how Amazon basically planted all their people in the right spots to get that contract. And that's kind of
how that works.
That's how he does business. He's a smart guy. He could be the world's richest man. Although I think, is Gates back ahead?
Yeah, Gates is slightly ahead now.
Probably not after Christmas.
Probably
after the big holiday season. I'm sure he'll take it back. But he does have a very intelligent but possibly corrupt way of doing things in politics. And this is certainly a great example.
Don't hate the player, hate the game. Reuters has the headline, Amazon's $1.5 million political gambit backfires in the Seattle City Council election. Now, maybe I'm just getting older and jaded, but $1.5 million doesn't seem like a lot to inject into a local city council election. This political action committee got a total of like $2.5 or $3 million, something in that neighborhood. And they didn't manage to elect, I think they managed to elect two people out of like seven. So the people in Seattle were like, nope.
The city council is not a huge position of power.
That's apparently worth $1.5 million.
But not in most cases. It's only because Amazon lives there.
The article did say that historically it's only been a $25,000 donation. So
that's a multiplier, isn't it?
I scroll down so we can see the picture because I just see the bald head. Oh, that's more exciting.
I wonder if Jeff Bezos is like a full-time wardrobe guy.
That's a sharp suit.
Yeah, he probably does.
You have someone who's like your personal stylist when you're that level of wealthy.
Personal stylist? He's probably got a personal tailor.
He does look a lot better than he did in the 90s.
Yeah, it's funny how that teenage blood will fix you right up. So they do point out that it almost went in the polar opposite. This was definitely a backlash. The people did not like him trying to interfere because one of the people who got elected was like a self-proclaimed liberal feminist communist who has just basically said Amazon must be driven out of the state. And it was funny to read there. Official announcement, and they're like, we look forward to working with the city council. But secretly he's seething, I'm sure. Poor guy. Losing the world's richest man and this election in the same year, how will he cope?
Just cries and wipes his tears with money.
Money that is tangible and physical, not like that evil cryptocurrency, which is only used by terrorists and thieves and money launderers. So right. Says the IRS.
Bloomberg has this article on the IRS's report that dozens of new crypto and cyber criminals are identified. I was trying to figure out what the headline meant for longer than I probably should have. Like new crypto, it's like new users of crypto that have a lot of crypto. So the IRS criminal division has identified people that should be paying taxes on crypto because I guess that's a thing.
But dozens. That doesn't seem like a very big number.
There are dozens of us. Dozens.
If it were more than 100, you would say more than 100, right?
Yeah.
So it's got to be less than 100. It's probably like 24. So you got to wonder how many taxpayer dollars went into tracking down the crypto criminals and how much of that they will get back stealing their money.
It's on average, it's 50%. The 50% of the money the IRS collects in a given year goes to collecting the next year's taxes, which is like half, which seems not very efficient.
In fact, it seems wildly inefficient.
But see, you have to have that mobster mentality. You collect money no matter what it costs, because keeping the fear in the populace is way more valuable than whatever you lose in that equation. So here in Kentucky, the bluegrass, we have a new governor, and it was hotly contested. It was like 4,000 to 5,000 votes.
It was very small.
So the decided it, And it was very contentious. It's interesting because here in Kentucky, some of the larger cities are more liberal, but, you know, the country folk are oddly Democrat and Republican at the same time. It's weird.
Well, it's for years because of the mines and stuff, they were Democrat.
Literally, yeah. Nobody here trusts anybody.
Yeah, which should be really the way it is. But
on one hand, they're, you know, conservative in, as far as, you know, guns, God, and government. On the other hand, they like those handouts. And there's not a lot of jobs. So it's a weird situation, but that's not the important part. The important part is when that election started getting weird, the Twitter bots seemed to get real active.
Close election in Kentucky.
Oh, no.
A close election in Kentucky was ripe for Twitter, an omen for the 2020. Now, this entire article is about one tweet. There was one guy, presumably not a bot, that tweeted, well, I just shredded a box of Republican mail-in ballots. Bye-bye, Bevin. And so this article takes that one tweet and analyzes how far has this spread. Was it a retweet? How did this... This is completely unsubstantiated. They did an investigation. Twitter suspended the account. There's no credible evidence that this guy was even in Louisville because he misspelled Louisville in the tweet. So this was probably not a bot. This was probably just idiots.
Or... the worst case would be someone in the Bevin camp who was setting up a way to contest a vote that he saw going against him.
And they misspelled Louisville.
My lesson.
It's a hard word. It's French.
English is not his first language.
This is maybe worth a look because this could be a microcosm for the 2020 election because, you know, when they did the re-canvass, the votes didn't change much. It changed by 50 or 100 votes, which is kind of a lot out of 5,000 votes. But, you know, the old governor conceded, finally. But this could be, if the election is down to the wire, because of this crazy two-party system that we have in 2020, people are probably going to freak out on Twitter, just like they did here.
Probably. When have they stopped freaking out on Twitter?
They're literally freaking out over everything.
They're freaking out about the 2016 election to this day.
Outrage culture?
There's no question people are going to be freaking out.
That's outrageous.
Yeah.
Twitter's going to become insufferable.
Become, once again.
Become more insufferable.
Do you think there's a critical mass of insufferable? Can it get much more?
Can we see some sort of social black hole forming, like the event horizon collapses in on itself?
Oh, Twitter could make it even worse where it just pulls tweets from... things other people like, which it already does, but make it all your timeline, just all that stuff.
I'm sure somebody's working on a version.
So annoying.
Well, speaking of the government and social media, every day the government gets more and more involved in social media because they see the power of it, as we see with Mr. Bevin. It can not really change the course of an election, but certainly stir people up. People went crazy over that tweet, both sides. So it got the job done. If that was just trolling, that was masterful. And the government more and more wants information about who's doing what on social media.
So TechCrunch has the article that Facebook has said that government demands for user data are at a record high in a headline that surprised no one. It goes on to talk about the different kinds of contexts that the government can request data from Facebook, which is basically anything. It's this person's gotten a lot of parking tickets. Can we get a copy of their Facebook data?
They also point out that most of it comes with a gag order. So sometimes you're allowed to report it, sometimes you're not. Sometimes you're allowed to say it happened, but not to who. There's all kinds of crazy rules, and a lot of them are simply, you will give us this and you will never talk about it.
That's disturbing, because they can't manage their databases. Foreshadowing.
But at least here in the U.S., I'm not going to say that Facebook has never put anybody in jail, because people do some really stupid stuff on Facebook, pose with guns when they're on probation, or pose with drugs that they just bought. Not smart. But in Vietnam, you have to do a lot less.
Vietnam jails a teacher over Facebook posts. I thought of the story from the nonsense section about things that should not be posted on social media, including the pets that you take on airlines, but... we'll wait till the end of the week on that one. Yeah, a Vietnam teacher has been jailed over his Facebook posts.
Now he had an interesting defense.
Yeah, he said it wasn't me. So
I'm sure there's a way to pronounce that I'm not going to try to. But this gentleman here was accused of this.
Making and
he says,
and spreading anti-state information and materials.
And they didn't say what that was. I was curious about that. But he says, that's not me. That's just another guy with the same name. And they're like, nice try, bro. Right into jail.
That is like the Vietnamese last name. Like,
yeah, I've seen that
has
a lot.
That last name.
Too bad we can't pronounce it.
It's like
stupid
Smith.
Americans. But yeah, rip that guy. What do you think? You think he did it or not?
I think we should grant him asylum. Like, can we write a letter to the State Department and be like, this guy needs asylum. Get him over here.
We're going to send a SEAL team in to extract him? What if we brought him over here and he starts, you know, like, crapping on the U.S. government on Twitter?
It's not me.
Well, he could do that after he's naturalized. Until he's naturalized, he's got to keep his mouth shut. He could work on videos and stuff for us.
So, the you know, we talk about the government getting involved in new technology like social media, but a lot of the ways the government is also using old technology in ways that it's not allowed to. Because these days, keeping a database of things is pretty trivial. We got big data, we got the cloud, cheap storage, just keep everything right, but it's not always allowed.
The Intercept has the article about the time that the NYPD kept an illegal database of juvenile fingerprints for years. So the NYPD only recently deleted this database under scrutiny. What happens is juveniles are fingerprinted and they're supposed to forward those fingerprints on to another agency. But in this case, the NYPD just kept the fingerprints because it's just data. They could just hang on to it forever, right? I mean, that's their right as law enforcement. You can't tell them what to do.
It was interesting because they sent it to that other entity to delete it. Well, that seems like an unnecessary step.
Well, I think the other entity maintains it and then they're supposed to delete it.
But this, so you're only allowed to use these if it's a felony, and then you only get to keep it for a certain amount of time. And there's all these crazy rules, but it's to the point where they were just keeping it forever.
Yeah.
And they couldn't say that they had used it in an investigation, but they would use it and then say that they found them in some other way. So
parallel construction, fruit of the poison tree.
Well, that was easy enough, wasn't it?
They also point out that if you're so young that your fingerprints are going to change, they use your like heel prints or footprints or something. Like,
do those not change?
That's a little Orwellian.
I don't know, but it's
well,
like,
usually they do that to babies in hospitals.
Because you're so young, you're getting a felony at that age.
A prosecutor would say that was intent to commit a crime, meaning that they intended to retain the data for longer than they were supposed to.
Fingerprints are the least of our worries, though, because we've entered into the world of facial recognition, which is much darker and much harder to avoid. Now, you do have to get arrested to get fingerprinted in a lot of cases. But facial recognition, you just walk down the street and they've got you. And some activists have found an interesting way to show this to people who are maybe a little apathetic.
Demonstrators scan public faces in D.C. to show lack of facial recognition laws. They look like, yeah... That's pretty cool.
They cut the. It says facial recognition
scan in progress.
Something. Yeah, yeah. That's a weird cutoff for that image. So obviously, what they wanted was to make people angry. Like, why are you doing this? Because
perfectly
then
legal.
The answer is everybody's doing this. We're just making it obvious.
Do you think in the future, like when we're confirming, like the next Supreme Court nomination, they're going to search through the facial recognition database and be like, well, here, you know, when you were in college, you were wearing this red Make America Great Again hat. And, you know, that's not acceptable.
President Yang does not tolerate that. There's a guy on YouTube who just goes around with a camera and he'll just walk up to, like, people be just sitting at a table eating. He'll just walk up and sit down and he says nothing. He just films them. And
I love those videos.
It's funny to watch them escalate. Like, what are you doing? And it's supposed to be a, you know, an activism type thing to show that's like, hey, I'm filming you, but there's also a camera up there. And you weren't worried about that camera, but you're worried about me. But he doesn't say that. He just stays completely silent. And if they confront him, he's like, yeah, I'm just taking a video. No, it's cool. I'm taking a video.
And like, I like the one where he walks into like a college classroom and there's a professor up front. And the professor's like teaching. The professor's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm recording. And she's like, well, can you go outside, please? And like, she goes over and closes the door behind him, but it has a window in it. And he sticks the camera in the window, and she's just like, what are you?
I mean, it would be super annoying if he did it to me.
Yeah, but it's funny watching
it. It is
people.
Funny to watch. And they got like private study rooms, and he'll just go in and sit down and hold the camera.
I'm just recording.
But yeah, they do point out something important. You are always on camera, and now the camera knows exactly who you are. So that's disturbing.
What could possibly go wrong?
We complain a lot about our broadband here in the U.S. It is terrible. And a lot of people say it's because it's deregulated. I personally would argue that if there's one entity that could screw it up worse than Comcast, it would be the federal government.
Labor's free broadband plan fires up the election battle. This is from The Guardian. So I don't know. I don't know that we're qualified to talk about another country's politics, but this to me reads like somebody who's trying to get the young people to elect him.
Yeah. Hey, young people, you like internet?
Is my read of the situation correct? Engagement challenge.
So they want BT, which is British Telecom, I think, right? To be 10% state-owned or something like that. And that would go toward giving everybody a baseline state-subsidized broadband. I don't know if it's based on income or whatever. Now, you could still opt into the better plans, but there would be one that is universal that everybody gets.
The most surprising thing about this was that there's a poll. Only 87% of adults polled go online at least weekly.
That read The Guardian.
Those people who live out like in the country, if they're old.
They don't have internet at all. You know what? Savages.
They probably don't realize, like, they're not counting certain things. They're like, oh, no, mostly I watch Netflix. But that's the internet.
Some of my family doesn't have internet, but, they still use, smartphones and stuff and data.
But that's the internet.
That's yeah. The internet.
But, they don't have an internet connection to their house.
I guess 13% of the people reading The Guardian were too stupid to understand.
I mostly just get on Facebook.
Yeah. But, how did they qualify it,
They didn't. It was just some dumb online poll.
Yeah.
Which is why you have to ignore it. Well, China, there is no segue here either. Man, these are some tough ones. Tough ordering today. China is having a bad time with Hong Kong. They're having some economic problems from that because Hong Kong was a big moneymaker. But that's not going to stop them in their space adventures.
China completes a critical landing test for the first Mars mission in 2020. This is according to Reuters. Now, this wasn't on Mars. This was in, north of Beijing.
Really?
But they simulated what it would be like to land on Mars. This is an autonomous system that's able to scan the landscape and adjust dynamically because it's incoming. It takes about 7 minutes to land. So the system has to be able to land in very varied, unpredictable conditions.
They use this big, giant rig to drag it up and then drop it and then, use the boosters, I guess, to test it. But that looks like something out of the War of the Worlds.
It's coming for me.
It's really pretty ingenious engineering. I mean, they're going to try to do a manned Mars mission fairly soon.
And they're going to do a competing, stop-off refuel station. Like, we're going to try to do the moon base. China's going to try to do their own space station.
Reuters speculates that China could become a major space player by 2030.
Who do you think will have better snacks in their space gas station?
China, definitely.
I don't know.
I think
they eat chicken feet. I don't know.
You don't know those aren't delicious.
It's going to be more variety.
And speaking of China, usually this story goes the other way. Because usually it's China who's insisting that Taiwan doesn't exist. But this time around, it's Taiwan saying, we do exist, and you better pay attention to that. You got to admit it.
Bloomberg has the article that Taiwan has stopped selling Huawei phones that identify it as part of China. So this is pretty cool. Taiwan's kind of emulating the U.S. a little bit here with the China ban, but it's in the time zone selection was one of the places. It refers to Taiwan as Taiwan, China. And so Taiwan has said, nope, if your phones are going to say that in software, you can't sell them here.
There was a list of what phones it was, but we've been paywalled. I read this on another site.
It was only three phones.
Yeah,
it wasn't every phone.
It wasn't a huge selection of phones. But here's the question. From now on, is China going to be every phone must say Taiwan, China?
Yes, they're that petty.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting. Also, I think they launched the entire Chinese armada. And the U.S. went through one of those contested waters just to show that we could. And they just like launched everybody. It's like, here's what we can do. Which, man, that war is going to be bad for everybody. Speaking of phones that are controlled by a government, Russia. Now, we've kind of talked about this before, but it's been expanded now. It's not just phones. It's literally everything with an advanced operating system.
Phones and PCs sold in Russia will have to come pre-installed with Russian apps. Russian lawmakers say the bill will protect Russian software companies from abuses and foreign tech firms. This is really progressive. I mean, this is basically what everybody is doing. It's like, no, if we're going to have like the Google apps and the G Suite, we must have local apps to help our economy, because they're looking at how much money foreign companies are making with these products. And it's like, why can't local companies make the same money? Let's legislate it.
But the question on everybody's mind is if any of those local apps are sending your data to the Kremlin.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Almost everybody's great for the Russian economy. Fantastic.
So that might not be as good as...
Hashtag shop local.
Are you saying the NSA doesn't have a copy of literally everything Google has?
I think that Google does not by default give the NSA everything. I think Google would rather keep it for themselves. When they are forced, perhaps they do. But... And we don't know that about these apps. Although, the NSA is not telling everybody they have to have Google on their phone.
Either. That's true.
So
for now.
Moving on to social media. We've talked about this before. They had been testing it in certain markets, taking the likes away from Instagram. And apparently, it's working.
Instagram tests hiding like counts globally. So there's a little chart there that shows how this negatively impacts. And it was more than I thought it was. Yeah, it depends. It varies by country. It didn't really affect things much in the UK, but Australia? Wow, that's...
People get very upset.
Yeah, that's... You know, there's a more sinister reason for this, though, and that is Facebook wants to insert itself into the influencer-advertiser equation. So if you don't have a like count and you can't tell how much engagement something has, why not sell the analytics of that to someone who's placing ads? So if you like a particular influencer, then Facebook can offer advertising services on their platform for that influencer and give you good data in terms of how engaging that was.
Quietly insert themselves as the middleman is what you're saying.
Yes.
Now you can still see your likes, but no one else can. So you would not be able to prove to an advertiser who's paying you that you got a certain amount of likes. They'd have to take your word for it. And of course, you know, a thought would never lie about that.
I never Photoshop my Instagram.
They don't. They use Facetune.
Now, if you're on Facebook, you might have seen ads for cryptocurrency up to a certain point. But at one point, Facebook was like, nope, we're getting rid of those. Apparently, nobody told the Dutch.
Dutch court orders Facebook to ban celebrity crypto scam ads after yet another lawsuit. So this is on TechCrunch. I guess maybe Facebook allowed crypto ads in some countries.
I thought they banned it outright.
They told us they did. They told Congress they did. It was like, oh yeah, we've taken steps to just not accept ads from, I guess that was just the U.S.
So anyway, they talked about this one guy who's apparently insanely famous, but I've never heard of him. Had you?
No.
Anyway, over there, he's insanely famous. And they were just using his picture in crypto ads. He had nothing to do with these companies. They're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, what's his name? Says buy crypto. And so he kept trying to get that fixed. And
bamboozled again.
They wouldn't do anything about it. So he finally sued them, and he's won. Martin Lewis, but that wasn't the guy. They bolded Martin Lewis's name, but not the other guy. Anyway, he's famous over there. Somebody in the comments will be like,
engagement challenge.
He's basically our Jesus.
Also, engagement challenge, if you're in Europe, were you getting crypto ads on Facebook until recently? Because we didn't think that was a thing.
I doubt our audience probably has ads enabled.
Smart.
They might see it. They might enable it on our channel.
Smart, except for when it costs us money.
Sad face. We do have a Patreon.
A store.
Facebook, as you say, are working to siphon more money off of their platform. They're unifying everything under the Facebook name, which is crazy, but they're also unifying all of your payments.
Facebook unites with payment services across apps with Facebook Pay, because this was the thing that was going to be cryptocurrency, right? But now it's not. It's just regular a payment service.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Libra was planned to be launched yet, but... I bet this was an arm of that. And they were like, oh, we're not allowed to do that. Well, just do the regular thing.
So this is meant to compete with PayPal and Venmo and things like that.
But if you want to give somebody money on any of these apps, you now have one consolidated place where you can do that.
I wonder if it's against the terms of service to send adult performers money.
I think that would probably shut down Instagram. Now, if you hate Facebook and Twitter and all the other things, and you think to yourself, I want a better way to do social media, but all these startups are, you know, they're great, except no one uses them, right? Well, maybe you can get in on the ground floor of the next big thing.
Wikipedia's co-founder takes on Facebook with an ad-free social network. It's WT Social. It doesn't have anything financially to do with Wikipedia. It runs on donations like Wikipedia. And it's an ad-free, terribleness-free social network.
Krista, what do you think about that layout?
It's fine.
Very utilitarian.
It's very utilitarian, but like without actually using it, I can't say how effective it actually is.
So it doesn't have all the features of Facebook. I don't even know if it has like a messenger or anything like that. They're really starting bare bones. But they claim it's going to be better because of, you know, it's ad-free and there's no influence from corporations and they're trying to control the toxicity in certain ways. But you can't just sign up. There's a waiting list. And the reporter said he was number 28,000 at the time of writing this article.
Well, now you can join immediately if you're willing to pay $100 a year.
I don't think anybody's willing to pay $100 for this.
Someone probably
media.
Will.
We need to go ahead and reserve the level one URL on the...
You know, I don't think it's going to be that big a deal.
No.
I don't think it's going to take
off. We
don't
even update our Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook might be hideously evil.
So deepfakes just keep getting better. You know, we've done stories about the things that defeat deepfakes, and then deepfakes get better. And that's a cycle that's going to continue, and it's going to be amazing because we're going to have really, really good deepfakes. But it's also going to be catastrophic because you can't trust any video from now on. And Twitter doesn't know what to do, but it's trying to do something.
Twitter has proposed flagging deepfakes, but would only remove them if the content threatens harm.
Who decides what's harmful?
The unwashed masses, apparently, with the flagging system.
Would that mean that the Jon Snow apologizing for season 8 deepfake is going to be removed?
Well, it might be harmful to those two guys that wrote it.
Yeah.
Because people have threatened their lives.
Mm.
That's not worth that. It was pretty bad, though.
Yeah. I think that's a losing battle. They're going to sink a lot of time and resources into that, and it's never going to beat the deepfakes. How do you pronounce this guy's username?
Markiplier.
Oh, I read it as Markiplier.
That's terrible.
Like, I put an emphasis on the I.
I hate notes. That.
Definitely Markiplier.
Anyway, he did an event, and you used emotes to do things, and somehow the YouTube moderation just went insane.
Engadget has this article. YouTube has reinstated accounts of Markiplier fans banned for emote spam. Hint, it's not all of them. The subtitle is, it appears to be a failure of both AI and humans. So, yeah. It was a choose-your-own-adventure thing in a live stream. And so, it was like green or red. There was a green or red emote that he created just for this. And if you spammed the green or red emote, which is literally what he was asking to do in the live stream.
He would do whatever you asked.
You wouldn't just lose your YouTube account. All of your Google accounts were banned. Like you couldn't log into Gmail, your pictures, all of it. A lot of people appealed, and the appeal was denied.
Now, they claim that's all put back together. He says it's not. He says there's plenty of people who are still coming to him and like, you know, WTF, bro. So
it is a trash fire. YouTube has become a literal trash fire. Fortunately, we're on Patreon and Floatplane.
But don't get ahead of yourself because, now this is two stories. We'll do this part first. This is the least concerning of them. Although, this is a little bit scary. So how do you, like in the judicial system, you don't have to prove a negative, right? Like that's a classic part of arguments. You can't be forced to prove a negative. How do you prove that children don't like you?
YouTube's new kids content system has creators scrambling. The government could sue them for thousands of dollars. So Yeah. YouTube has rolled out a thing that's like, is this content aimed at or for children? And it's like, what? Pretty sure the level one news is not aimed at kids.
But it's now the wording is much more dark than that. What was the phrase? It was more about, will kids like this? Or is it appealing to children or something like that? And it's like, what? I don't know what kids like.
Well, if the algorithm thinks that kids like your stuff, then you don't get, like, all of the analytics go away. You don't get targeted ads. You don't get comments on your videos. You don't get the community tab. You don't get a lot of things.
But if you don't tell them up front and kids do like your videos unexpectedly, you can be fined, which is just insane. I like to take this time to point out that level one material is not for children at all. I think you should all be chimney sweeps. I hate you. And you should not watch this channel ever.
I doubt there are any children watching right now.
Some people say they watch with their children, which, you know, somebody needs to call Child Protective Services. It's just not right.
One of my fondest childhood memories was going into the BBS meetup without anybody having any concept of how old I was in reality. That was fun. Because I made everybody uncomfortable because I was kind of young.
Weren't you like 13?
Like super uncomfortable. Yeah, but they were all like 20.
That's still pretty weird.
Yeah.
That's pretty weird.
Super weird.
So you talk about, hey, we're on Patreon and, you know, we have the other ways to monetize us. But here's the thing. YouTube has changed its terms of service. And it has a very, very insidious line in there, which it's had for a long time, I think since 2012, but it's sharpened it a little bit. And basically what they're saying is, you need to make us money. You don't need to make you money. You need to make YouTube money.
YouTube says it has no obligation to host anyone's video. Other changes affect children's content. So, yeah. YouTube clarified, they tried to clarify this, but they only made it worse and more ambiguous. Basically, the legal language here, you could drive a truck through. It could mean literally anything. And in an attempt to clarify it, they only made it worse.
But they point out, legally, it is their sole discretion, that's in the language. So if you have a channel like Alex Jones, for example, right? Alex Jones makes a lot of money, but he doesn't make it from YouTube because they've demonetized and banned him. I think he's gone completely now at this point, right?
Yeah.
But if he were still there, he's still doing fine just using YouTube as a content platform. But he's not doing anything for them except eating bandwidth and causing them headaches in the legal department. So it's their sole discretion. Let's just silence that voice.
They did that with the Blender Foundation too, didn't they? Like, because the Blender Foundation had a huge number of immensely popular videos that they do not run ads on, and YouTube was just like, nope, deleted. And
yeah, then they point out.
Yeah, like people like freaked out and brought it back.
And some people, as part of their Patreon, will say, hey, if I hit this amount of money, I'm just going to turn off ads on all the videos because I'm getting the money here. Well, in YouTube's view, what are you doing for us?
Yeah,
you got to go.
YouTube is shockingly bad at monetizing videos, though. There are a lot of videos where, I mean, you look at like creators that are larger than us, and brands are willing to pay a lot of money, and larger creators just turn off AdSense altogether because there's no money in Google's ads because they can make a lot of other ads building in their own.
They're bad at a lot of things.
We're getting large enough. We could probably have a built-in ad here and there. We do for special projects. And those are a lot more lucrative than what YouTube offers.
Wendell's saying that to soften you guys up to the idea of us possibly including a pre-roll ad. That's something that we've discussed recently.
Probably shouldn't have told you that.
For sure.
Don't hate us.
All right. Tomorrow this is another week where business is just a massive block. So it's business only Wednesday.
Oh.
Corporate Wednesday.
Oh, the worst day.
And Triple Threat Friday.
I'll get my throat ready for the boot.
We'll see you then.